Welcome to the Security Weekly News Wrap-Up 156 for the week of 3 October 2021. Resilience, Twitch, Apache, Canopy, Microsoft, Lantenna, and the U.S. Navy plays Age of Empires, as well as all the show wrap-ups on this edition of Security Weekly News Wrap-Up Remote.
This is Security Weekly. For security professionals, by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
The complexity of cloud infrastructure means every organization's security challenges are unique. Whether your challenge is threat hunting, policy management, cloud workload protection, or all of the above, Uptix helps you quickly identify and eliminate observability gaps in your security programs. Uptix, analytics for the modern attack surface, observability for the modern defender. That's Uptix, U-P-T-Y-C-S. Check them out at securityweekly.com/Uptix for a free trial.
Welcome, I'm Doug White, and this is the Security Weekly News Wrap-Up Show Remote. All the shows from this week on Application Security Weekly number 168, John and Tyler have Hillary Benson, the Director of Product Management, Secure and Protect at GitLab on the show. Hillary was on to talk about what the term developer-first security means, and I didn't know what that term meant either. And so how are these developer-first security ideas used in GitLab security offerings? So some time to learn something. On Business Security Weekly number 234, Ben, Jason, and Matt had Dan Purvis, the Chief Executive Officer at Valentium, on the show to talk about medical device security. That's a scary one. There actually has now been a death that was related to ransomware during the pandemic, and this discussion was around the ramifications to public health of ransomware and other security compromises. I know I was thinking about this a lot. I had to go to the hospital with my mother the other night, and when we were there, I was thinking about, wow, not only is a pandemic stressing all their resources to the max, but they also, you know, I was thinking about all the security compromises and what that would do to them. So an interesting show that very timely. In the second segment, Alana Clark, the Assistant Director for Stakeholder Engagement at Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency, which is CISA, as we all know it, was on the show to talk about CISA's initiatives, public-private partnerships, Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and the fourth annual Cyber Summit. That show had the host Jill LaToro and Matt Alderman running that particular segment. So again, pretty interesting segment. CISA is rapidly becoming a fairly significant resource in the United States for all this kind of information. On Enterprise Security Weekly 245, Adrian Tyler and Tyler Shields had Richard Renders, the head of security at Gravity Payments, on the show. Pretty interesting, timely one. Richard was on to talk about how one of the biggest challenges you have is to deal or have to deal with in security is, well, dealing with vendors and how to interact with them. Yeah, we've all dealt with vendors, and that can definitely be a, you know, because everything is excellent. Everything is AI ML enabled, and it's all going to make all your dreams come true. Just drop that check in the mail. Yeah, make it payable to Doug White, please. Not Security Weekly. They have too much money. In the second segment, Ryan Kalember, the Executive Vice President of Cybersecurity Strategy at Proofpoint, was on to the show. Ryan was on to talk about the latest threats and some tactical shifts in threats like using Office 365 for lateral movement, Fin7 Redux, and a whole bunch of other, you know, new tactical shifts in threat vectors. So an interesting segment indeed. On Security and Compliance Weekly number 89, Flea, Jeff, Kat Valentine, and Priya Chaudhry had Vim Rames on the show. Vim is the CEO and principal consultant at Wire Security BV. The show was all about ISO 27001 and with all the grim details that you may need to know about that compliance certification. So if you are ISO or you're pursuing ISO, probably well worth checking out. On the Security Weekly News, number 155, Adrian Sinabria filled in for Jason Wood, and Doug was on location in the rain-soaked South. Adrian and Doug talked about Facebook, BGP, always fun to talk about stuff like that, Microsoft 11, and we talked about several things, so it wasn't really commentary this week, but just more discussion. It's not that long. You should watch that. On Pulse Security Weekly number 713 last night, first up was Dan DeCloss, often guest, the founder, CEO, it has every title you can hold, the founder, CEO, and president at Plextrack. Dan's always a great guest. The focus is on the latest results from Cyber Risk Alliance's survey of 315 security practitioners in the U.S. and Canada. Probably one of the more interesting things from that was that there was a correlation. This isn't going to surprise you, but it's always nice to see data backing things up, because as you go to upper management and you want to argue things, having data is always one way to sell everybody on this. A correlation between purple teaming and program maturity was one of the key findings. I mean, you know, and I mean, again, it sounds like, wow, really? Imagine that. But the reality of that is that having data like this is really helpful, because I have recommended purple teaming to organizations before and had them basically push back saying, too expensive, too much trouble. And, you know, so getting more data gives you a better basis to argue with upper management, which I know you spend a lot of time doing anyway. On the second segment, yum, yum, yum. It's a security onion. This segment was about how to set up the security onion, use cases, and so on. So these are real, I really like these segments a lot, and I know maybe you're liking them too, but these tech segments about how to do things is really fun. You know, I really enjoy them a lot. Now, they didn't use hammers on the case like Paul and I did with the computer together. But nevertheless, Security Onion is both friendly and fun and doesn't leave any of that sticky residue that so many other tools create. And in the third segment, of course, the news. My threat this week is going to have to be the global, international, universal, and possibly multiversal threat, existential threat, and others, whatever other terms you can put in front of threat of, collapse of the internet backbone. So this is based on what I'm going to call it face plant. So there was an incident this week which left this giant gaping hole in the world when Facebook went down. And I know you may be already saying, well, Facebook, I don't use Facebook, that's for old people. But we really saw this happen this week. There was massive news stories about it on Tuesday because it happened on Monday. But, you know, what happened this week, you know, actually started to give me the feeling that it could actually threaten life as we know it. And I don't usually like to be hyperbolic about this stuff. And I always push back on Y2K and push back on all of these sort of disaster scenarios. But think about it. How many of the things that you do every moment of every day, maybe even when you're asleep, relies on some kind of chain of some sort of supply chain of successes? I mean, every single packet that you're using now probably has to traverse some kind of network, possibly the interweb. It has to find that next hop multiple times, get to the destination, interact, act back, and return, just so you can see that balloon animal porn that you've probably been watching. I mean, that's a thing, right? I think I made that up a long time ago in a case, but it amused me to no end. I mean, think about it. We've seen this sort of thing before, but this particular event, so this particular outage really, really hit home to me because, you know, I've pushed a conf and gotten locked out of my system. I have on multiple occasions, and I had to drive somewhere, and, you know, several times in the middle of the night to go back physically and re-up my systems, and it took some time. Now, mine didn't reduce the world to a quivering mass of jelly, and force everybody to switch to Twitter for 5 hours for their cat porn or whatever. We didn't deprive everybody of cute cat videos for 5 hours or anything like that. But, it really is a bigger idea that was just, you know, I identified with it because I had this very sort of thing, assuming that you know, what they say is true. So, you know, when everything in the world starts moving toward a mesh, and we are, And it's moving there far more rapidly than I ever thought it would move. I mean, if you'd asked me this 10 years ago, I would have said, yeah, someday there's going to be this convergence of everything communicating with everything in a mesh. But I didn't think it would happen this quick. I thought we'd sort of be, you know, sort of fits and starts. But all of a sudden, there's a huge chain of things involved and even basic transactions that we're doing today, whether you're shopping at the grocery store, you're using Skype or whatever else. I mean, ring the doorbell on this house, and that signal has to traverse the airwaves. It starts a video online, identifies all that, uploads a video, and so on. And in fact, if the internet, and I even tested it earlier today, I decided I'm going to see what happened. And I know you don't have to set it up this way, but this I'm at somebody else's residence. And I went and I disconnected their internet, and I went out and rang the doorbell. And guess what? It did not ring. And I was like, wow. So just if a single piece of the modern fabric of reality fails, well, this whole digital house of cards comes down into a quivering pile of ones and zeros. Facebook down, big deal. I can live without, you know, seeing my 15th cousin six times removed posting a picture of a family reunion. But when the Facebook infrastructure is used as a backbone to create a single sign-on to your account at the hospital, and the knee bone is connected to the virtual leg bone, well, all of a sudden it starts to mean something to everyone in everyday life. When Facebook went down, it took down Workplace, and Workplace, an internal app at Facebook. Well, guess what they were using that for, among many, many, many other things? They were using it to actually open the physical door at Facebook. So a card swipe, door opens. And really quickly, you know, they couldn't open the doors. And that kind of starts to turn into allegedly couldn't open the doors. If you can't even get into the building, it starts to be a real issue. And I mean, it gets ugly fast. One of the times when I had an outage, I card swiped, my ID wouldn't work. And I know I got in by calling security. They came over with a good old fashioned analog key and unlocked the door. And I said, can I get one of those keys? And they said, no. So I couldn't even get him, and my outage wasn't causing the door not to work, but it was still the same kind of problem. I mean, how long is it going to be before you're saying, Alicia, open the microwave, insert the Hot Pocket, cook for 6 minutes? I don't actually know how long you cook a Hot Pocket. I mean, we just always gnawed on them frozen because we didn't have a microwave. But, you know, you get the idea. I mean, what happens when it all stops? I mean, how long is it going to be before there's an app or a backbone controller that's literally controlling almost everything, at least in some part? If you can't sign into your calendar because the backbone's down, well, what do we do today? I don't even know what my meetings are if I can't get into that. Car, hey, start up and drive us to the ski hill. Why is the car not working? Wait, are we outside the house? Door, open. Ah, wait, what the hell do we do now? We're standing in the driveway. It's, you know, rapidly descending toward, you know, 0 centigrade or below, and we're just standing there. And oh, my phone doesn't work anymore. I was going to Google how to get in house when door won't open, but unfortunately that's the case. And I have been locked out of an Airbnb that had you were supposed to use a code, and the code didn't work, and I didn't have a phone signal, and we were like, what do we do now? Fortunately, our car works. We were able to get in the car, drive down to the highway, and I got a phone signal. I was able to text a person, and they were like, oh, sorry, I typed the wrong thing. I mean, what's the address? You know, what is my address? Well, it's Doug's house on the list. And I don't know how long it will be. Somebody asked me my daughter's telephone number the other day. I was like, oh, yeah, I don't know. I just say her name and it rings. And, you know, I used to know all these phone numbers and things. I mean, I can't access that stuff. I'm not sure about the address. Can you just look it up on the GPS? Wait, that's not working. 15 minutes later, we're all gnawing on raw human leg bones in a forest somewhere, and civilization as we know it is over. We're back to entertaining ourselves by throwing rocks. I mean, you know, this can even get into your medical devices. There were several news stories this week about the threat to medical devices and so on. I mean, if you don't have an embedded medical device right now, you probably will someday. In fact, the fact that you don't already have one probably increases the likelihood that you're younger, which means that you'll be older later, which means that, you know, the likelihood that somebody's going to need an insulin pump or a pacemaker or something, and then it's going to be controlled by a supply chain, is going up dramatically. I mean, What happens when your Mark 2001 automatic knees that you bought suddenly have an LDAP failure at 13,000 feet on the double black diamond and you can't even call for help because the ski patrol is just driving in circles since their Oculus eyeballs can't connect? I mean, you know, think about that. I mean, it all sounds like some kind of sci-fi world, but the reality is that is coming fast. In fact, the snowmobile the ski patrol is driving is probably going to be autonomous. And, you know, the ski patroller doesn't even know how to drive on manual. They didn't learn because, you know, it's like people today always talking about, can you drive a manual transmission? And you always see these older people going, of course I can. What's the matter with you, these kids today? But a lot of people, they can't drive a manual transmission. So I don't know how long it's going to be before we have autonomous vehicles. And people are like, I don't actually know how to drive. I never bothered to learn. And everybody ends up being like Manhattanites who, you know, are like, cars, what do you need that for? I know I'm starting to sound hysterical, right? But you get the idea. When the APIs have APIs and those APIs have APIs and those all have lambdas that rely on three different server farms in orbit and one of them fails, well, the whole chain comes crashing down. So I guess the point is that we're going to have to sit down and have a talk. And not the ones about how when, you know, an ovipositor is inserted into a glandulum, good things happen, but the one about resilience. And I did this disaster tabletop thing. It was actually years ago. And I was talking to some ER people at the hospital. And I asked, what happens if the X-ray machine's network connection fails? So this cable is unplugged. And they said, well, the X-ray machine doesn't work. And I said, so then what do you do? And one of the older people there said, well, we'd have to drag out the old film X-ray machine and use it. And I said, oh, okay, can we do that and give it a try? And then one of the younger people said, yeah, but we can't develop the films anymore. They would have to be mailed off somewhere. And the older person said, what? I thought we developed those down there. And they were like, no, that we got rid of that years ago. And they were like, well, if we can't do X-rays and CAT scans, we're going to have a tough time doing our job. And, you know, the doctors started looking at each other that way. They say when you're going, you can cure this, right? It's going to go away. And they're sort of looking at each other with that like, yeah, it's not that simple. They couldn't develop the film. So I think it's probably time that we all start talking about resilience because the mesh is coming. We're all going to get caught up in it, whether we want to or not. I mean, you may say, I don't want to be in it, but you will be. I mean, unless you go all Ted Kaczynski on us and live in an unheated shack in the woods, you're probably going to be in this mesh. And I'm not usually the end of the world doomsayer on a soapbox with a sign that says the end is near, but I do try to be realistic. And I was just looking at this table here while I was writing this, and I was writing this earlier, and I was thinking how many things on this table rely on some kind of offsite connection to actually work. And I realized almost everything sitting here required something. I mean, notepad will still work, but I sure as hell can't read the news to you from a room behind the fifth hole in a golf course, a long way from the studio and also a long way from you. So you need to start thinking about how resilient your organization is to someone else's problem. What's going to stop at your company when Facebook, Google, Amazon, DNS, LDAP, AD, you name it, a strand of wire in a boiler room somewhere in lower Manhattan or something else fails and everything stops? What's the backup plan? A long time ago, I was auditing a gas company and I asked, what if this SCADA system goes offline? What happens? And they literally said, Louis grabs a wrench and he goes down in the tunnel to close the relay. And they actually showed me Louis doing that. And I wonder if that old guy named Louie is still around and that wrench is still laying there on that table, or if there's anyone that even has a map of the tunnel anymore since Louie ate that bad prawn salad sandwich from a gas station vending machine made by Lucas Electronics and died. Anyway, resilience. I think it's time to make time for that conversation. And now after that, the news. If you have a Twitch account, well, the time is nigh to change your password. Sorry. Right now, I mean, like today, like maybe pause this for a minute and no, don't pause, stay live. Twitch had 135 gigabytes of its internal data posted to 4chan on Tuesday. The leak included Amazon-owned source code, Twitch source code, Twitch comments, a list of all the highest paid channels and the streamers that run them, and how much money they got. But the real goodies, I mean, that was all juicy. And there's some debate about whether this was true or not. But the real, according to this the article that I linked, the real goodies were that emails and passwords were contained in plain text for the streamers. So again, if you're a streamer or you use Twitch, I'd reset now. Even if you weren't in, even if you weren't in the released code, but we don't know the extent of the breach at this point. I mean, Twitch claimed that login credentials were not exposed, but said they were continuing to investigate. But the article that I posted actually has screenshots of usernames and password in plain text. So despite what Twitch said, there's stuff there. Twitch said that full credit card numbers were not exposed, but well, you know, they said that about usernames and passwords too. They did not find, he didn't have any credit card numbers. The Twitch disclosure said that some data were exposed due to a server conf change, which allowed a third party to access the server. They said that they reset all keys, but advised streamers to get new keys again. And they put a link. There's a link in the article if you're wanting to do that. Despite Twitch's inability to see what was lost, Privacy Shark, who was the person doing this research, released records with full names, email addresses, comments, and the amounts they were paid, which is in that article. So they got it from somewhere. The anonymous user who posted the leak claimed this was just part one of the leak and called Twitch a disgusting, toxic cesspool, amongst other things. The leak also revealed evidence that Twitch has been scraping competitors' services for live channels and view counts. They went on to reveal some screenshots that show how Twitch uses anti-ViewBot tech. So that was pretty interesting as well. And if you don't know about that, a lot of streamers have bots that go in and view their streams so that it boosts their views and, you know, improves their monetization. Anyway, warn your users about this nasty breach. And of course, if you're a streamer, you know, take heart, or if you use Twitch for whatever. Canopy is a nanny app that allows parents to try to protect their whelps from online content via content inspection. Now, I always say, and I've done a lot of responses to schools with this, if you want to raise a house full of hackers, well, the best way is to try and stop 11-year-olds from accessing porn, or probably 35-year-olds, too. Good old Net Nanny was always there, and I think three times I got called to schools where they were going, "We don't know what's happening. We put this Net Nanny thing in, and the kids are still finding ways to get to porn." And I was like, yeah, it's pretty easy. All I got to do is look up some TCP protocols and you're all set. And they were like, how would they know how to do that? You know, it's like, there's this thing called the internet where you search how to get past Net Nanny. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, Canopy contains some vulnerabilities, which are pretty serious ones, which allow the monitoring to be disabled, allowed for location tracking of the people being monitored, and also allowed malicious redirects to be pushed into the content. The service basically does content examination, which tries to prevent sexting. It sends alerts to the parents if people try to go to certain websites and so forth. So pretty, you know, standard kind of Net Nanny sort of stuff. This particular one uses AI, don't they all, to examine the content. Probably use that, we used to have a thing called a porn stick, which sounds a lot more fun than it is, but it basically looked for like skin tones in content to determine if it was, you know, possibly pornographic. But anyway, to install this tool, you have to grant a lot of privilege to the service. But alas, the best of intentions fails, and good old cross-site scripting attacks rear their ugly head again. And on this particular case, they used cross-site scripting attacks to inject malicious code in this. In examining this particular app, Craig Young at Tripwire basically found they could use a standard cross-site scripting attack, I mean old school stuff, to beat the basic site filter since it allowed up to 50 characters in the pop-up box. So they were able to push 50 characters, which is more than enough to write a redirect or something like that. Craig went on to find all sorts of nasty things in this that could be done that was beyond just scripting your way past the filter. So you might want to read this article if you're using this app or you're thinking about using this app. Apparently, the company didn't really give a response to this. But also, if you're interested in old cross-site scripting type attacks or other things like this, it's a pretty interesting article. Apache contains a nasty remote code execution bug that has been patched. But much like Exchange, ESXi, and so forth, Apache often doesn't get patched in production. It's one of those things people don't like to mess with because, you know, patching your web server is, you know, affects customers and all this kind of stuff. Apache is currently estimated to be about 25% to 33% of all web outward facing web instances. I was surprised that it had fallen that far, but you may not even know, though, you have an Apache instance if you're running, you know, pre-built servers or pre-built web-facing stuff, because it may be using Apache in the background, so more supply chain kind of stuff. The flaw was found last month in Apache 2.4.49. Now, this is an example of an interesting example of actually patching being worse than not patching, because, you know, it's just like, is the juice worth the barking? I don't know. I never get those right. Is the juice worth the squeeze? That's what it is, right? anyway, the patch to version 49 was where the problem started. So if you have earlier versions, this particular problem didn't exist. But obviously, there are other problems that, you know, had people patching to 49. A new patch is out, though, that will skip you to version 51, which did correct this flaw. It's essentially another old school thing, path traversal. So path traversal vulnerabilities was a kind of stuff I used to do a long, long time ago. And basically, you know, pushing escape characters in to avoid coded filters for people trying to do path traversal to get to, you know, usually what you were trying to get to was the password or shadow file or something like that. And you could do that by pushing escape characters instead of actual characters if they had literals in their examination, which they usually did. So they're looking for you to try to type dot, dot, slash. And if you do escape codes like %2E, which is a dot, you could actually get around a lot of these kind of filters pretty easily. This is old school hacking stuff. So, you know, the server has to watch for people trying this kind of stuff. And apparently that patch did not do that. So they actually re-pushed in the ability to do path traversal. So yikes. Microsoft has already backpedaled on requiring TPM 2.0 and CPU checks for Microsoft Windows 11. They do sort of still require TPM version 1.2, but you can get around that as well. They have been pretty adamant about this new security posture for Windows 11, and we're going to require TPM 2.0 and certain CPU requirements, all to prevent hardware and firmware type attacks. But apparently this was one of those, well, it won't install because it detected something kind of thing that was easily circumvented anyway, because it didn't rely on those things. It just checked for them. So that's a very big difference, right? It's a totally different thing if you say you must have 400 horsepower or it, you know, we're just requiring you to have 400 horsepower, but it'll run without it. And so Microsoft basically released a statement that said, in order to avoid people wrecking their PCs, it's not a direct quote, with unauthorized bypass scripts, you know, we're going to go ahead and release an official script that will let you bypass the check. Okay. Now, I'm guessing this is a liability issue because when you officially bypass their security requirements, you're essentially acknowledging that you understand the risks and you want to forge ahead. I mean, that's essentially what they're going to make you click, right? So you're saying, I understand, you know, that gets them off the hook for getting sued over these firmware attacks. Their script does require a TPM 1.2 security processor, though. But guess what? There's already a script to bypass that as well, because again, it's a check rather than a requirement. So I'll warn you that this type of thing can cause serious problems. So if you're bypassing, you know, these install requirements, so be sure you test this on, you know, a test box before you try it on your personal devices or your company devices, and make sure you have good backups before you do any kind of OS upgrade, because, oh boy, yeah. In the same, with another thing from Microsoft, Microsoft will begin disabling Excel 4.0 XLM macros by default in Office 365. And this is, of course, to protect from all these malicious attachments that come in. Now, the 4.0 XLM platform was added in, wait for it, 1992. So this is one old dog. And it allows the manipulation of spreadsheets with scripts. I mean, this is what XLM did, right? It was the macro language that was used in old versions of Excel. They switched to VBA macros later in Excel 5.0, and I don't remember exactly when that came out, but it's been a long time. But you know how people are. I mean, if A, you know how to script in XLM, but you don't know VBA, you don't really want to change. And if you have a script that works to balance your books or whatever, you just don't really tend to dedicate the cycles to rewrite all those scripts. So that kind of conversion is a very time consuming thing. And, you know, it gets that old adage about if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And, you know, you'll hear that from management all the time. And so these things tend to persist. And so I'm sure there's plenty of companies out there right now sitting around with these old scripts. I mean, there's probably script snippets I wrote on 4.0 XLM for people that are still being used because they work. And they don't want to bother to, you know, have them recoded because then they have to pay for that. There's probably scripts I wrote in the bank in the 1980s that are still being used. Well, I guess they switched off Lotus 1-2-3 at some point for Excel, but they may have converted those into 4.0. So fair warning, if you're still using Excel 4.0 scripts, you'll likely lose the ability to run them in the near future. The scripts are targeted by TrickBot, QBot, Drydex, ZLoader, and pretty much anything else that wants to get in using a malicious document. So painful to get rid of and find even, you know, searching and finding all those things can be very tedious. The EU Parliament has voted for a resolution that will ban AI-powered biometric mass surveillance like common facial rec systems that we are seeing in use all over the place. The manufacturers of such products have admitted that their software is often biased, particularly racially biased. So there's a lot of controversy surrounding them. This particular decision in the EU asks for a permanent ban on automated facial rec systems of individuals in public places and prohibits predicting policing based on behavioral data, you know, Minority Report. The resolution asks for more open code and transparent code to allow review and specifically mention Clearview AI, which is one of the biggest ones that's out there right now. These systems are being used in the United States a lot, and they have high level of adoption rates currently. So this is a big deal. And I can't resist a good exfiltration story, no matter how esoteric. This latest one is called Lantenna. I really enjoyed this story a lot. Every time I see this guy post, I'm immediately like, I love his research so much. But it apparently allows you to use the Ethernet cable to broadcast data wirelessly, even though the cable's not connected to the wall anymore. So even air gapping might fail. The paper was called Lantenna Exfiltrating Data from Air Gap Networks via Ethernet. Yeah, or via Ethernet cables. And it was written by my favorite Dr. Mordechai Guri at Ben-Gurion University in Israel. They've done all this kind of stuff with like flickering the screen brightness to do binary. It's just so much fun. But basically this one works by the malware on the system gathers data and then generates a 125 megahertz band emission, which can be received by a nearby __ receiver. This is definitely that James Bond kind of attack and requires access. And, you know, Tom Cruise is hanging on wires overhead and so forth. But it did work. Guri claims that with dedicated and expensive antennas, the signal could reach tens of meters. So not very far. So it's Vanek freaking stuff again. But it's definitely in the cool things that aren't a huge immediate threat, but they're sure fun to read about. So check that one out. And finally, the USS Kidd, a Navy warship, streamed hours of gameplay from a Facebook page on the Navy destroyer. The whole focus was on apparently being able to play Age of Empires off the Navy ship's Facebook page. And if you don't know what Age of Empires is, it's some kind of pop-up game that I've seen it pop up, you know, in ads and things like, you've got to be playing this game. Which means I don't want to play it. But it would appear the Facebook page was compromised and basically used to make the ship look bad, as there was a lot of prank-like old-school hacksaw sort of stuff posted. The Navy secured the page and took it down and said they should be able to regain access to the page shortly. Yeah, it was a Navy destroyer. Bad form, guys. And that's a news wrap-up for the week of 3 October 2021. Thanks for joining us. Please get vaccinated. I'm actually asking you now. I'm really tired of this pandemic. We'll see you next time on the Security Weekly News.